Jackson was given a lurid wink from Carl as he led Marie down the deck. They disappeared into the superstructure, and Jackson was sure he heard Marie giggle. He couldn't believe it. She preferred Carl? The boy was 5 years younger than him. His fists clenched in anger. It was being an Ivet. He knew it was. The little bitch. Carl's cabin was a compact compartment overlooking the prow, definitely a teenager's room. A couple of processor blocks lay on the desk along with some micro-tool units and a half-dismantled electronics stack from one of the bridge systems. There were holograms on the wall showing star fields and planets. Clothes, shoes and towels were scattered about on the deck planks. It had about 10 times as much space as the cabin the Skivos and Cavas were forced to share. The door shut behind Marie, muting the sound of the congregation gathered on the aft deck. Carl immediately kicked off his plimsolls and unlatched a broad bunk which had been folded flat against the wall. "He's only 15 years old, Marie thought, "but he's got a tremendous body, and that smile. God, I shouldn't have allowed him to smooth-talk me in here, never mind be thinking of bedding him," which only made her feel even randier. The congregation started to sing a hymn, their voices bringing a rich enthusiasm to the slow melody. She thought of her father out there, his eager-to-make-amends expression this morning, telling her how the river trip would show her the wholesome satisfaction to be earned from the quieter side of life and honest labours. "So please, darling, try to understand Lalonde is our future now, and a fine future at that." Marie unbuttoned her shirt under Carl's triumphant gaze, then started on her shorts. The settlements along the Julif changed subtly after the third day. The Swithlands passed the end of the Haltane Marsh, and villages began to appear on the distant northern bank. They lacked the trimness of the earlier buildings. There were fewer animals and cultivated fields. Less jungle had been cleared, and the trees standing so close to the cabins looked far more imposing. The river branched, but the Swithland sailed on purposefully down the main channel. The water traffic began to fall off. These villages were still hard at work to tame the land. They couldn't afford the time it took to make sailing boats. Big barges were chugging down the river, loaded mainly with myope timber cut by new settlements to sell to the shipyards in the city. But by the end of the first week, even the barges were left behind. It simply wasn't economical to carry timber to the capital over such a distance. There were tributary forks every hour now. The Julif was narrower, down to a couple of kilometres, its fast waters almost clear. Sometimes they would sail for 5 or 6 hours without seeing a village. Horst felt the mood on board turning, and prayed that the despondency would end once they made landfall. The devil makes work for idle hands, and it had never been truer than out here. Once they were busy building their village and preparing the land, Group 7 would have no time for brooding. But the second week seemed to last forever, and the daily rains had returned with a vengeance. People were muttering about why they had to travel quite this far from the city for their allocated land. The jungle had become an oppressive presence on either side, hemming them in, trees and undergrowth packed so tightly that the riverbanks created a solid barricade of leaves extending right down to the water. Faultwine, a tenacious freshwater aquatic plant, was a progressive nuisance. Its long brown ribbon-like fronds grew just below the surface right across the width of the river. Rosemary avoided the larger clumps with ease, but strands would inevitably wrap themselves around the paddles. The Swithland made frequent stops, while Carl and his younger sister clambered over them, cutting the tough, slippery fronds free with the radiant yellow blades of fishing knives. 13 days after they departed from Durringham, they had left the Julif itself behind and started to sail along the Qualheim tributary. It was 300 meters wide, fast-flowing, with vine-swamped trees 30 meters high, forming a stockade on both banks. Away to the south, the colonists could just make out the purple and grey peaks of a distant mountain range. They stared in wonder at the snow caps shining brightly in the sun. Ice seemed to belong to an alien planet, not native to Lalonde. In the early morning of the 14th day after leaving Durringham, a village crept into view as they edged their way up the river. The first they had seen for 36 hours. It was set in a semicircular clearing, a bite into the jungle nearly a kilometre deep. Felled trees lay everywhere.